Hi, I'm Annie Wilson, and I'm a lecturer of marketing at the Wharton School.
And I'm Ryan Hamilton. I am an associate professor of marketing at Emory University.
And we are the authors of The Growth Dilemma, Managing Your Brand When Different Customers Want Different Things. So The Growth Dilemma is about how to manage relationships between customer segments. In short, as brands grow and as they attract new customers to the brand, they serve more groups of customers who tend to want different things from the brand. And because of this, almost inevitably, as brands get bigger and bigger, it can lead to conflict or disagreement between different groups of customers who don't necessarily agree on who the brand is supposed to serve, what it stands for, or how it should be used. So the Next Big Idea Club asked us to summarize five key insights from the book, and that's what we're going to do now.
Insight number one, segments of people relate to each other in predictable ways. So we've identified four different relationship types in the book, and I'll just run through them briefly now. First is separate communities. There are some brands that serve different segments of customers in such a way that they really don't step on each other's toes very much. They may want different things from the brand, but it doesn't tend to cause problems. So one example of that we go through in the book is Lego. Lego still serves their traditional customer segment of children who are looking for an interactive toy, but they also have a large and growing segment of what they refer to as adult friends of Lego. These are adults who buy Legos as collectibles or as models that they will display in their homes. Lego serves both of these customer segments really without too much problem. A second relationship type is connected communities. These are offerings that get more valuable the more people use them. So a lot of things that benefit from network effects, things like social media platforms or shared platforms like Venmo, get more valuable the more people use them. Software platforms like Microsoft Office are another example. The more people that used Microsoft Office, the easier it was to transfer files between people. The third relationship type is leader-follower segments. These are where there's one segment that is cooler or aspirational or expert in some way. And because they use the brand, there's another segment or segments of followers who like the brand more because the leaders are there. One example of this is Crocs. Crocs somehow got cool a few years ago. And that was in large part because there was a group of trendsetters who decided Crocs were cool. And once they started using the brand, that gave the rest of us kind of social permission to also start wearing it without being as embarrassed as we should be based on how Crocs actually look. The fourth relationship type that we talk about in the book, and I think the most interesting, is incompatible segments. This is when brands try to force segments together under the brand that really want something dramatically different. They have different values or different preferences, and trying to serve them simultaneously causes a lot of heat and friction between these groups of customers and can blow up in the face of the brand. The second insight that we have is derived from the first, and that is that growth itself can cause problems. So this isn't the way that a lot of brand managers, a lot of business leaders think about growth. Growth tends to be seen as just a good thing. We're going to get more customers in. We're going to get more revenue in. That's going to mean more profit. The big argument that we make in the book is that some types of growth, some of these relationship types, can work wonderfully and can lead to really sustainable, profitable growth. But there are other types of growth that can be kind of dangerous for a brand and can cause a lot of conflict and can actually cost the brand money in pursuit of that growth.
And that brings us to our third insight, which is there are four main sources of conflict between customer segments. You can have functional, brand image, user identity, or ideological conflict. So functional conflict is essentially when one segment of customers can't use the brand's offerings the way they want to use it because another segment is using it in an incompatible way. So think of Starbucks, for example. If you are a third placer, you're somebody who wants to go to Starbucks and hang out and read the newspaper or relax with a cup of coffee, that segment comes into conflict with the mobile order segment, who comes in and wants to use Starbucks as a place to quickly get their coffee that they come in, they go to the counter, and they're going to leave. But the piling up of mobile orders and the masses rushes of people who coming in to get their orders comes into conflict or ruins the experience for a lot of third placers. And so Starbucks has really been managing this functional conflict in different ways throughout much of its corporate history and continues to grapple with it today. The second source of conflict is brand image conflict. And so this is the idea that because one group of customers is using the brand, the image of the brand comes into question for another group of customers. So in the 90s, Tiffany started selling a large amount of cheaper silver products to less wealthy customers, mostly teenagers or teenagers trying to profess their love to their high school sweethearts. And what this created was brand image conflict for the wealthier customers who thought, you know, is this really Tiffany or Audrey Hepburn's Tiffany if I have teenagers buying cheap silver jewelry from them? And Tiffany had to figure out how to manage that brand image conflict before the brand became too fragmented or diluted or eroded because of that conflict. The next source of conflict is user identity conflict. And so this is the idea that because one group of customers uses the brand, another group can no longer use it as a signal of their identity with the brand or with a particular group of people. And so, for example, for a lot of its history, wearing Vans signaled to people that you were a skateboarder. As Vans has become more fashionable, and people like me wear Vans now who don't know how to skateboard, it has created user identity conflict for the skaters who feel like wearing Vans no longer actually strongly or clearly signals their skater identity. And so Vans has to figure out, how can we protect that skater identity for our skater audience while still inviting in these more fashionable audiences who want to use Vans for other reasons other than skateboarding? And then we have ideological conflict. And so this is when, because the brand aligns itself with a certain group of customers, it creates ideological conflict with another group of customers. And so as Target, for example, has gone back and forth on whether it is going to get behind supporting LGBT plus customers through its products and also through its messaging, it has created and recreated ideological conflict between groups of customers who either want Target to support LGBTQ plus rights and to do so through its merchandise and products, and customers who don't want Target to take that stance. Importantly, though, you can manage these different sources of conflict, or there are ways to avoid conflict between customer segments. And you can do this by building fences, ladders, or planks. And this is our fourth insight, that you can manage segment relationships using fences, ladders, and planks. And so fences is the idea that you want to create separation between segments that might otherwise come into conflict with each other. So if we take a brand like Carhartt, who's famous for their workwear, Carhartt has a segment of customers who are their blue-collar workers who wear Carhartt because it's durable and it's good for working in. Carhartt also has a segment of customers who like Carhartt because, for whatever reason, it's fashionable now to wear Carhartt or workwear, even in places like the red carpet. And so what Carhartt has to do to prevent conflict, usually brand image conflict in this case, between these groups of customers, is to keep them separate from each other. So market different products to them, use different messaging for them. In their case, they also have different stores for them. And that keeps them both happy because they can get what they want from Carhartt and not literally interact with each other, come into conflict with each other. Another way you can manage these relationships, though, is by creating ladders. And so this is when you make one group of customers clearly higher status or more important than another group of customers. And essentially what you're doing is you're making it explicit or implicit that one group of customers is your leaders and the others are followers. And so, for example, what Tiffany does is they have different lines of jewelry that come at very different price tags that clearly signal the leaders, who are paying millions of dollars for their Tiffany jewelry, and then the followers, who are paying maybe hundreds, maybe thousands, mostly hundreds of dollars for their Tiffany jewelry. So it creates this hierarchy that, again, keeps the segments happy because they can get what they want from Tiffany without feeling like it's eroding the brand image or creating any type of conflict in any way. And then the last thing you can do, which it can be useful in some rare cases, is you create what we call planks. And so if you think about walking the plank, you're essentially showing some group of customers the door. Other ways of saying this are firing customer segments. And so there are times when if you have two customer segments that conflict with each other, the smartest thing to do is to let one of them go or to force one of them away from the brand. And so for Six Flags, for example, there was a time when Six Flags was running a lot of different pricing discounts and incentives. And what happened was a lot of teenagers would buy up the tickets to Six Flags because they were cheap or they were discounted. And then they would go to the parks and they would enjoy the all-you-could-eat benefits. And they would also act like teenagers at the park. And what happened was it ruined the experience for a lot of other customers who wanted to use Six Flags and enjoy the parks or potentially bring their family to the parks for a fun family day too. And so what Six Flags did was they essentially showed those teenagers the door. They changed the pricing incentives, they changed the number of discounts that they were running so that those customers didn't get as much access to the park. And so essentially what it does was it implicitly fired those customer segments. Ridership overall did drop for the brand, but they made more money from the other customer segments that wanted to come back to Six Flags because they restored the experience of the park for them. And so that's our fourth insight, is that you can manage segment relationships by thinking about how can you separate segments? How can you create hierarchy between them? Or do you need to show one out the door?
Insight number five is that you are never done managing customer segment relationships. So this isn't something that can be applied once within an organization and then you've permanently solved the problem. In the book, we track several brands over time to show how they address or solve some conflict between segments and then show how a different set of conflicts come up later. And this is just the evolving nature of markets. And so as new segments come in and old segments go out and as brands change their positioning over time, all of this is very fluid. And so this is not a one-time fix. This is not a one-time action that brands can take. We're proposing a discipline for managing growth and for managing customers over time, which is that you constantly have to be managing these relationships and understanding what your customers want and make sure that those don't fall into conflict. Now, Annie and I are both marketing professors, and so we wrote this book from a marketing perspective. We understand that Next Big Idea Club is not made up exclusively of brand managers. So let us end by just pitching this as a specific instance of a more general problem.
Which is the idea that anytime you bring different groups of people together, they can come into conflict with each other. And so you need to constantly be thinking of different ways to prevent or mitigate that conflict. And so in our book, we actually talk about an example of this at a country club that I went to growing up, of how new members wanted different things from the club that old members wanted from the club. And so club managers had to figure out how to build fences, ladders, or planks between those customer segments. But as we were writing the book, we would observe these instances everywhere, whether it was a friend who went on a family vacation and it turned out their in-laws maybe had different expectations of the vacation than their family. And then they had to figure out how they could actually manage that conflict. We see this in politics all the time. As a candidate tries to increase their base and be more popular, they're trying to appeal to more people who have different values and want different things from the candidates. And so they have to figure out, how do I keep people who want different things happy at the same time? And it's this constant management of segment relationships between each other and between the politician and the customer base, or the country club manager and the members, or the person who planned the family vacation and their in-laws who show up with all their great ideas of what they're going to do on the trip. We even see this in organizations. So as organizations grow and hire more employees, you sometimes get more factions in different segments that have conflict or have different interests. And so whether it's in marketing and brand management or any other domain, this fundamental idea of managing the different things that different groups of people want from an entity requires constant monitoring and supervision.
That's it. We hope that you will enjoy reading The Growth Dilemma and that it can help you with whatever problem it is that you're trying to solve. Thank you.